If you're an author with the goal of doing more speaking, perhaps even getting paid to speak, it's true that having already written and published a book can really help. Some speakers' bureaus require their speakers to be published authors, and many other organizations that hire or schedule speakers also find a book helpful. But that's just one piece of the puzzle. Writing a book and writing a speech are two very different crafts. Delivering a compelling and engaging speech is yet another. So if your goal includes becoming a TEDx speaker, you are going to have some work to do. Today, we're talking with an author who has accomplished both things. She has written and published a book, two actually, one of them a French translation of her English version. She has honed her message, and she delivered a TED Talk that has garnered 150,000 views just in the first 2 months. How did she do it? That is what we're going to find out.
Welcome to the Ingenium Books podcast for the author, publisher, changemaker.
Being an author is something that you've got to take seriously.
You're an indie author, you take the risk, you reap the rewards, you are in charge of the decisions, you're the head of that business.
What happens if you start writing your book before you identify your why? What's the problem with that? The Ingenium Books podcast. Your podcast hosts are Bonnie and John Wagner Stafford of Ingenium Books.
Hey, that's us.
We are joined today by author Marjorie Onos. Marjorie, welcome.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
I'm afraid I have to get you to start by telling us who you are. I mean, I know who you are, but telling everybody else listening who you are, what you're passionate about, and what your book is about.
So I'm a mom on wheels, and I'm a mom on wheels, and this is the title of my book, Mom on Wheels. And it's really important for me because I was a disability advocate before, for the past 25 years, actually, very passionate about this. And I was working with parents who have a disability. And then when my son was 16 months old, I had a car accident and I became paraplegic. And so I became what I was studying, which is a mom with a disability. And so for me, this is my passion, this is my life, and this is what I like to talk about.
Apparently the universe thought you needed to know a little bit more about what the people you were advocating for were experiencing.
Apparently.
So, and every time that connection is made, whether I'm describing this to somebody else when I'm talking about you in your book or whether you're talking about it, I just get goosebumps. It's, you know, the parallel is it's kind of astounding. So we're talking today about the fact that since you published your book, you've also delivered and there is published a TEDx talk. Yes. Now, many authors, and congratulations, by the way, of course.
Thank you.
Now, I think there are many authors and aspiring authors who maybe dream one day of doing more speaking and using their book to help them do that. It's not a straight line, of course, from one to the next, but I'd really like to dive into, first of all, what made you interested in becoming a TEDx speaker, and how did you think that that was going to help you with the message that you're trying to share?
Yeah, great question. I don't think it was a conscious choice, actually. A few years ago, I started speaking, and I started speaking, you know, in inspirational speaking competitions without any like big purpose or aim. But every time I spoke, I felt more empowered and I felt my message got also clearer. And a message that I wanted to tell when I was 20 years old and I had decided that my career was going to be working with parents with disabilities. I thought my accident had taken my voice. And so every time I spoke, it was sort of like, oh, my voice is still there. And actually, because I am now a mom with a disability, my voice is actually louder, or it resonates differently to many different people, audiences, and communities. And that felt like, yes, you know, maybe my life can continue with it, the same purpose, having the same purpose. So I started with those speaking competitions and won the Grand Slam in 2021. And this led me to a meeting with someone who, you know, is pretty much like the catalyst to leading to the TEDx talk. And that's Brian Miller. And I spoke to him, and right away I knew that he was going to help me like get that message really clear to be able to continue my message in a different format, because the book really helped. The inspirational speaking really helped as well. And so the TEDx became sort of the one thing that would tie everything together and would clarify exactly what I want people to know about parents with disabilities.
So we have to deal with that. What is that message? And you know, we're in a 30 minute or so podcast, but I think this is demonstrative of the power of the work that you've done, and the fact that you'll, when I ask you the question about what your message is, that you have probably a different way of describing what it is. But I think it's important for our listeners to know, what is that message? What is the crux of what you have to say?
Well, as a disability advocate, all I could hear when we talk about parents with disabilities is the negative side. Oh, they're too slow, or maybe they don't know enough, or maybe they can't physically do it. And so the message was very negative. So my message wants to be something very positive. And it basically says, there's a lot to learn from a lot of people, including parents with disabilities. And actually, parents with disabilities are doing one thing that most parents don't do, and that's we're solution focused and not problem focused. And because of that, we have something to share to the parenting community, but pretty much to anybody, because being solution focused is really helpful for anyone.
Yeah, I would say it's game changing.
Game changing. Yeah.
Yes. And that makes you a game changer.
Thank you.
So you met Brian Miller, and I'm struggling with where to take us here to start. But what was the first thing you had to do?
The first thing was to really try to hone in the message. And so through about 5-6 meetings that we had together, he was telling me like, okay, so what exactly do you want to say? What is your message? What is your experience? Tell me about stories. And so we kept sharing back and forth, and he had read my book. He's actually one of, he left a testimonial.
Yeah.
And so he had read my book, and so he knew about my stories, and we shared about this to really try to see what exactly are we trying to convey in the TEDx talk. And because the first thing, you know, we have to convince TEDx event organizers.
Right.
And so we need to be clear what that was, so that we could convince them and get an invitation.
Wow. So how long did that take to get to the point where you could make the pitch to TEDx?
To make the pitch to TEDx, that was actually pretty fast. I would say like within 6 to 7 weeks, we had, you know, a pretty good idea of how to present myself, introduce myself, and what the message was. So that was pretty quick. That was, I think, the easiest part of the whole process.
Okay, cool. So then you make your pitch. Now it's pins and needles.
Yeah.
Waiting to, what did you do while you were waiting, and what did that feel like?
Well, it was actually, I was looking at the big map that TEDx has on their website and trying to figure out which one do I want to pitch to. And then it was sort of like, oh, it's not this one, or that date doesn't work, and so forth. And so when I pitched and I was waiting, it was sort of like, okay, it's out there. Now we'll see. The answer came back pretty fast because I actually pitched to two places, and I got an answer very fast from one who's in Canada, the one that actually I got picked,
right,
or invited to. And so they told me very rapidly, we need to interview you. And there's like the whole process. So I did the interview. And then I had to wait after the interview. And that was a long week of waiting.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Their theme was the butterfly effect. And I felt that it fit perfectly with what I wanted to say, because a butterfly effect is sort of like the wings of a butterfly could actually impact, you know, and create a tornado. And that's sort of a bit the image. And what I wanted to do was to share this into a speech so that it could maybe create a change in society in how we view parents with disabilities. And so I really wanted to get in. And so I did the best I could and I got invited.
And so what is the invite like? It just sounds so exciting. What is the invite like? What is it? Does it say you're in, pick a date, or happens to you from there?
It says, you're in, great. You now have 7 weeks to get your shit together.
Wow.
Yeah. No, in this case, it was like it's their date, because basically they choose 10 speakers, one date. And so we have to show up on that date and perform live.
So 7 weeks. And you know, if somebody hasn't gone through either this process or any other process where you're writing a speech and preparing to deliver it, I mean, there's different levels. I am notoriously bad at, you know, like last minute, I guess maybe I better, you know, and winging it is probably not what you want to do in a TEDx thing. So 7 weeks, what did you have to do in that 7 weeks?
So in my mind, it was clear that the toughest part would probably be learning it by heart. And so I knew that I needed at least 3-4 weeks to learn it, because I'm like, since my accident, my memory is just not what it used to be. It wasn't great in the first place. So it was just like, I needed that time, which meant that, you know, I was left with 2 to 3 weeks to write the speech. It was right before the holidays as well, Christmas and New Year's. So I also knew that there were times where I would not be available. So basically, I knew I had 2 weeks to write it, back and forth with Brian. And then I had those 4 weeks to learn it over and over and over again. And that's how I, you know, separated the time. And so Brian and I kept it to those 2 weeks to write the speech. Then there was the holidays, and then I came back and started learning. There was also sort of Brian's associate, Lindsay Ray, who does theater and could sort of like movement and how and cadence and how I could sort of deliver the speech to be more impactful. So I did that with her in that first week. And then I had 3 weeks of like, again, rehearsing and using a lot of mindfulness exercise. That I stopped doing everything else. All I did was learn the TEDx.
You made speech. It a full-time
It was
endeavor.
A full-time, yeah.
I want to talk about the writing of the speech part.
Yes.
Having done a little bit of both kinds of writing myself, I know that it's different style, but I want to, how was writing the speech either the same as or different from the writing of your book?
It was different because I knew I had 12 to 15 minutes to make an impact. And so I can't have extra words. It needs to be very clear. And it needs to be very clear within the first minute. People will disconnect and not listen to your talk. within like a few seconds, actually. And so it needed to be punchy from the get-go. Then I needed to introduce myself. Then I could sort of like introduce the idea. But it needed to get like punchy from the beginning so that they would get to the part where I sort of share my idea about parents and what we can learn about or from parents with disabilities. So that was different. In a book, the writing was more sort of I'm telling a story or I'm starting with a story. Mm-hmm. Certainly my book was how we organized it. And so in the speech, I needed to first say, this is why you need to listen. This is why I am the person you need to listen to. And then I could share my stories. And so that was the difference. What did help, though, is that because I had done all of this work with or for the book, I had all of those little stories and anecdotes that I could pick and choose and, you know, from to be able to make my point. And so that was like so precious. Brian loved it because it was like, which story would like fit? And then sometimes I would have an extra one and he would say, I've never heard this one. And can we use it to make your point? And so it's a bit different, but in the same time, very similar in terms of the process to get those stories.
Right, right. So the rehearsing, and you talked about the support from Brian and his team. Did every time you rehearsed, was it with either Brian or the other person that worked with him, or did you do rehearsing on your own? What kind of rehearsing? Do you rehearse on video? Tell me all about that.
Yeah. Many different ways. And I think the key is many different ways. So I did rehearse in front of Lindsay. I did rehearse in front of Brian. And for those rehearsals, some were like readings, you know, where I had to read and sort of like use my like cadence, really. And some of them were by heart. Some were like sections, not the whole thing. And then, you know, in between, I had to do it myself. And so I did sections at the beginning. Then I built section one and section two together. Then I would learn section three. Then I would start from the get-go and from section one to section three. That was probably the first week where I did sort of that and every day. And so every day that means my son is off to school and that's what I'm doing. And I'm doing this on camera. And I'm recording it and I'm listening and I'm looking at the camera. Then I had a voice memo when I would do exercises or actually physically do an action. I recorded it on voice memo in my phone because then I would put in my AirPods and I would go for a walk and then I would have like my speech in it. And the whole time I would walk around my neighborhood, I would listen to the speech and sort of like try to say the words before I heard the words to try to consolidate. If I was washing dishes, that's what I did. If I, you know, like hand bike that I do in front of the TV, well, this time it was no TV. It was my speech in my head. Sometimes I would rehearse in front of Thomas, my son. I rehearsed in front of my niece. I rehearsed in front of colleagues that I said, can you come in a Zoom room? That was more towards the end where I felt my nerves. I knew the speech, but my nerves would be the thing that would sort of make it harder. Yeah. So I needed to put myself in situations where people would look at me as I was saying the speech. So it was many different ways.
That is amazing dedication.
Yes.
And diligence. So amazing. So the day approaches when you have, because you had to travel, the location was, you live in Montreal and the recording was
London, Ontario.
London, Ontario. So that's like a 8-hour drive.
Yes. In good conditions.
In good conditions. Okay. So that day comes. Tell me about that.
Well, it's, I was supposed to travel on the Thursday, and the event was on the Friday. And then on the Tuesday, we hear that there's a huge, huge snowstorm coming, to a point that the Canadian government tells everybody to stay home.
Oh. And I'm like, I can't stay home. I have to go do my TEDx talk.
Exactly. I can't stay home. Yeah. But I have post-trauma of a car accident in wintertime. And so I was like, how am I going to do this? And I think, you know, the big warning stay home was given on the Wednesday morning. And I said to my mom, can we just leave now? We're going to meet the storm halfway. That's where we're going to sleep tonight. And then the next day we're going to drive more. And so my mom's like, yes, let's do this. So I texted my son, like, he's in school, not supposed to receive text. And I'm texting him saying, by the way, I'm not going to be home tonight because I'm leaving now. Don't worry. There's, you know, my niece, who's an adult who was going to be there. And so we traveled in that snowstorm. It was horrific. It was every 20 seconds I had to close my eyes and breathe, remember that I was safe in the car, even though I felt like it was really re-traumatizing me the whole way. It was horrible. I didn't speak to my mom the whole time. My mom knew. I had to explain to her that this was really important. I was nervous for the talk, but I was also nervous for our lives. There was so many cars in the ditch. It was crazy. It was just really bad. But this is how much I wanted it. And I wanted it not for me. I wanted it because at that point I had put in so much effort. I knew that I owed it to all parents with disabilities to represent well. And so I had to just make it work.
Oh my goodness. And of course, by inference, listeners will understand that your accident happened in the winter.
Yes.
On a snowy, icy patch.
That's right.
Wow. So you made it.
Yes.
What is it like when you arrive? Like, is there a place to stay? Do they welcome you with open arms? Do they make you feel warm and fuzzy and comfortable? Like, what's that all about?
So of course there was like a hotel room. There's rehearsal. So we arrived just in time for rehearsal, the day before. It was a bit surreal because you see the big red dot on the stage. You can feel the excitement everywhere and the last minute preparation and the cameras being set up and the sound checks and so forth. They were really great. It's Western University who organized that event. They had sort of prepared the ramp for me to be able to get onto the stage. So they really thought of accessibility and inclusion to make sure that I would feel welcome like any other speaker. I was the only one with a visible physical disability. And so that was awesome. Everybody was just really excited. I didn't want to rehearse because my coach had said to me, if you don't know your speech by heart, you know, 24 hours before, then just don't need to do that. You don't, like, you know it already. You don't need to prove it to yourself. And so I just did the sound check and then I went to bed because that's all I needed. I felt my brain, my nerves needed to just sleep as much as I could to be in top shape. And I had asked to be in the third position. That was also sort of an advice from my coach. When you're third, you're in great shape because everybody's sort of like excited. The first two broke the ice, but they're not tired of listening to a whole bunch of people all day long. And so I knew I was like early in the morning, and I dreamt of my speech the whole night.
Oh my goodness.
I was conscious, semi-conscious. I could hear my brain sort of go, nope, that line was not right. Say it again. I would like go back and forth, section one, section three, section two, all together. But I did sort of rest, and that was the important part. And so the day came. I could not eat breakfast, not so much, just a little bit. And then I was backstage waiting for my turn. And the producers had put like the first three together backstage. Everybody else was in the room. And so I was backstage listening to the first two.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was also very nerve-wracking. So I ended up meditating for 45 minutes. Every time I opened my eyes, I felt the nerves come back and like rush. And I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to do that. And then I went, no, 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 change the language. You are doing it no matter what. And so I spoke to my little voice in my head who wanted me to just like escape and go back to Montreal. And I was like, no, I'm doing this. And so my little voice, you need to work with me and make sure that I actually do a decent job. And that's what happened.
Who's in the audience?
Part of the producing team, part students. My mom was there. So that was like my one person. And then pretty much the other speakers. And so the way TEDx events are organized is that they have a limited number of people that are allowed to be in the audience. It's about 100 people. And so there are
still 100 people. It's 100 people.
Yeah. And three cameras.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did you have to address the different cameras? Did you have to follow the red lights or did you not worry about that?
They told me you don't worry. You just deliver your speech as if.
Okay.
We'll do the rest in terms of the editing and so forth. Yeah.
Good. Okay. So how did you feel about delivering it?
I think it's the best speech I've ever delivered. Like I came in, I felt poised. I was able to deliver the speech a bit slow, but it was fine. And I could see like people react to the speech as I was giving it, which actually sort of like made me more hopeful that I could deliver the rest. You know, I saw people sort of tear up. I saw people sort of like smile, laugh when there was a joke. And I ended the speech and I was like, my God, this is the best, you know, rendition of that speech I've ever done. And I left the stage feeling really empowered. And I was like, I just now hope that when it gets out there, people actually do react positively to the message. But I felt just at peace with the whole process.
That's it couldn't have been any better. In theater, they call that peaking right on time. Sometimes when you over rehearse, you peak a day or two or three early, and then it's like, you know, opening night is not going to be any good because you peak too early.
Yeah.
Or if you peak too late, you peak on the day three. So you peaked right on time.
Yes.
Sounds like you had a good coach.
Yes.
Yes.
Very good coach.
So then the next part, so you've delivered the speech, but it isn't out anywhere yet.
No.
What happened next?
The hardest part. Out of the whole year, the next part was the hardest part because it's the part where you have absolutely no control. No control, no information. It was a waiting game. My coach from experience sort of said to me, it's probably going to come out in 6 to 8 weeks. That's usually when they come out or start coming out. But I could see, you know, the speaker from Western U, TEDx, were coming out like probably four weeks after the event. but not mine. And by the 8 weeks mark that my coach had mentioned, 7 out of the 10 speeches had been online released, and we were 3 who were not. And so started to get worried. Maybe they forgot, maybe something happened. I don't know. And so we were trying with the TEDx organizer of the event, trying to see, like, is there data that they need to check? Because sometimes TEDx, like the larger body, needs to check or fact check what we're saying.
Right.
So it was like, okay, let's provide proof for what I'm saying so that they know that it's true, or it's, you know, based on research and data. But it didn't seem to be that. But again, we weren't getting any information. And then, you know, an 8th person was put online, still not mine. I think I'm the last one who got out 6 months after.
Oh my goodness.
6 months after. And the day it came out, it was really incredible because it was the first time I met my coach in person. And I was there working with him on other keynote speaking. And that evening, it was 2-day work. That evening, he calls and says, oh my God, your speech is out like now. And it was just like serendipitous. Like it was just like perfect, perfect timing that we could sort of celebrate together. And the reason why it took so long is because TEDx thought my speech was so good, they wanted to place it in the number one position. So every day, let's say they release 100 speeches, the position in which you are released that day will be more likely to be seen if you're like up there in the first few. And so mine was in position 1, and that's why they had taken some time to release it,
to make sure that they could be in that number one position.
That's right.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Yes.
And then we were also watching and waiting along with you. And then once we saw that it was out, it was incredible how the views went up. So I think it was in the first couple of days, it was like over 30,000 views. Yes. I don't remember exactly what it was, but
yeah, it was about that actually. Then the first week it was 50,000 views.
Yeah. And I just checked before we started recording and it's at 150,000 now.
That's right. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that is, I think it's fair to say that is impact.
Yes.
Yes.
I will even, like me who don't usually like to say these things, I will say that is impact. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So congratulations on all of that. So, we've gone a little over time, and I did it on purpose because this is important and I think it's really of value. But what's happened since then? What has it opened doors? Has it changed things in some way, shape or form for you?
It actually gives, legitimacy. So when I apply or when I sort of want to do more speaking, people react differently. It has also created a lot of opportunities for connections, you know, on LinkedIn. So every time I share about the TEDx talk, people listen, they look at it. It has brought increased sale and position in terms of the book. So I think it's really a great way to leverage and position yourself as authority, which then gives you more opportunities, more contacts, more connections, and a greater community to speak to. So for all of that, I would do it again. For me, it was also an advocacy thing. So for me, just to think that there's 150,000 views that were done on this particular theme, which is usually, like I said, you know, parents with disabilities are usually seen as something like negative. Well, this is actually my way of putting representation in a positive way. So that was also very important to me, and that's a win for me as well.
Yeah. So what's next for you?
Lots of keynotes. So I'm working really hard. By in a few weeks, I should have a brand new website. I prepared a couple of keynotes this summer that are very strong, that talks about accessibility and retail. So basically talking to business owners and companies about the importance of accessibility and why it is important, and talking to high school students and college students about resilience and how we could face and embrace change. And we need to actually to embrace change to be able to be more resilient as a community and also as individuals within those communities. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's really good. It sounds like the sky is the limit.
Yes, it's always the limit.
Yeah, it's always the limit. And we trust that you will, of course, keep us all posted as to the next best exciting thing. Is there anything I did not open the door to ask you about? Anything else that you have a burning desire to let our listeners know about?
No, just try it. If you have like if you have an idea, or if you have like something you feel like a message that's burning inside of you, if you're an author, technically you should go and do it. It's painful. It's long. It's scary as hell. But it is also worth it for every single second that you will invest in.
Awesome. Marjorie Onos, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of the Ingenium Books podcast, please like, share, and subscribe. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, but also consider subscribing to our YouTube channel, where you can see these episodes in addition to hearing them.